Welcome to the Newsbusters podcast with your host, executive editor of Newsbusters, Tim Graham.
Hello and welcome. As there are major developments in the current scandalabra about National Public Radio and the aftermath of Uri Berliner's essay at the Free Press. Berliner resigned on Wednesday morning at about the time where one would say, "Mommy, is my suspension without pay over?" Berliner had to know that dropping this bomb on NPR was going to mean people would refuse to work with him, and they did refuse. Add to that all the fun that conservative Twitter's been having with the old tweets of new NPR CEO Catherine Marr. I broke a story today about her political contributions in the age of Trump via opensecrets.org. There's about $3,000 in donations, all to Democrats, of course. The one that resonates most is $500 to Fair Fight PAC, a project of the media's favorite election denier, Stacey Abrams. Election denial is cool when Democrats do it. It's this kind of double standard that journalists inside liberal bubbles can't spend any time pondering. It would be nice to have a single media standard on election challenges and a single standard on rioting. Yes, we only need Joe Biden's favorite warning. Don't. It would be nice to have a single standard on civility. But the left can accuse us of being Jim Crow 2.0. They think that's fair. That's not only wildly inaccurate, it neglects the Democrats were Jim Crow 1.0. Anyway, Catherine Marr also gave $1,500 to Tom Perriello, who is a Democrat congressman for Virginia. And then he worked for the Center for American Progress Action Fund. She gave $100 to Maya Wiley in her run for mayor of New York City. We see her on the air routinely as a leftist pundit on MSNBC. This just drives home the point again. There's really not a dime's worth of difference between NPR and PBS and MSNBC. It's all one big pro-Democrat left-wing blur. So why are we required to pay for this with our tax dollars? We're not paying for MSNBC. It was one thing when NPR was founded in 1971, when Three Dog Night had the top single in the country, you know, that Jeremiah was a bullfrog song. Back then, when I was a young lad, your options in radio were quite limited, especially in the smaller, more rural areas. We didn't have as many stations to listen to. Sometimes they were awfully fuzzy. And they felt commercial radio just didn't do enough service to the community, so we needed public radio. Well, look, now we're in 2024. When your audio options seem unlimited by comparison. I mean, every jerk has a podcast. Hey, wait a minute. There's really not the same aching public need for taxpayer-funded radio. It's like arguing we need publicly supported 8-track tapes. Now, I'll make a concession. If you're looking for news on the radio today, and you're on the FM dial, you know, outside of big cities like Washington or New York or Boston, and maybe St. Louis in my personal experience, there's probably not a lot of news radio stations or even news headlines at the top of the hour. You know, when I was young, even the top 40 stations would have a couple of minutes of news from ABC or something every hour. Now they don't. But you can find the latest news in so many different places. It's all over your phone. So we would say, defund NPR already. It's not needed anymore. But removing taxpayer funding isn't the same as ending NPR. We're just saying make it more like MSNBC. It's a station for liberals that's supported by liberals or by woke advertisers, but not by you and me on the right wing. The most important part of Berliner's resignation message, and it was very short, is he took on Catherine Marr, the woke new CEO. He said, "I cannot work in a newsroom where I'm disparaged by a new CEO whose divisive views confirm the very problems at NPR I cite in my essay at the Free Press." I mean, that is the wokeness. You know, Marr wrote this pom-pom memo to NPR staff that was posted publicly on NPR.org. She didn't name Berliner at all, but she claimed this unnamed person was attacking NPR staff not for what they report, but for quote-unquote who they are. She was taking his disdain for affinity groups by race and sexual orientation and whatnot as creating politically correct lingo. But he didn't say what's wrong at NPR is it's got too many blacks or gays or something. That's not what he said. Now a group of about 50 NPR employees have sent an open letter to Marr and to Edith Chapin, another executive muckety-muck. Ben Mullen at the New York Times has this. They demanded Marr needs to offer more support to the rank and file. Well, she already did that in this pom-pom go team memo. You guys are all the greatest. But they want an explicit takedown of Berliner's piece, which Marr refused to do. She must have decided that somehow responding to Berliner was seen as losing. You can't take it on point by point. That's giving Berliner the attention he wants. But we welcome them trying to do this, trying to discredit Berliner's argument. It sounds desperate, and it's pretty easy to shoot down. In my column today, I talk about Steve Inskeep, the host of Morning Edition, who took to his Substack blog to slam Berliner's article as quote-unquote filled with errors and omissions. Oh, really? I have not really followed his Substack much because it always seemed like on his Twitter account is, now we'll discuss more about my fabulous book on Lincoln. Whatever. But I downloaded this thing. Wow. I mean, it was rather remarkable. Inskeep crowed, "His colleagues have had a rich dialogue about his mistakes." And Inskeep dropped the bomb. It was an article that discredited itself. Yeah, there's no half declaring it, you know. He went to war. Inskeep declared an error in that Berliner found in D.C. voter records that NPR had 87 registered Democrats and zero registered Republicans. Now, Inskeep's point was, well, there's like 660 people here. Now, obviously, we understand there's probably a pile of these people that live in Maryland, deep blue Maryland. There might be some in deep blue Arlington County, Virginia. Fairfax County ain't much better. He didn't go get the Virginia and Maryland voter registration records. But it was 87 to 0 in D.C. Inskeep says when he was asked about Berliner at the San Antonio Book Festival, he says he told him, "I am a prominent member of the newsroom in Washington. If Uri told the truth, then I could only be a registered Democrat. I held up my voter registration showing I am registered with no party." Some in the crowd gasped. Uri had misled them. Huh? Now, Berliner didn't say NPR has 87 employees and it was 87 to 0. He didn't say that was all the employees at NPR. He didn't say it was 87 to 0 and there were 23 no-party registrants. That's true. But he didn't challenge. Inskeep can't challenge. There were zero Republicans. Why don't you go in there and show me where the Republicans are? Several of these NPR people harumphed on social media that they registered as no-party. It doesn't really mean much. It's just the same way that left-wing journalists would tell a pollster if they're actually going to answer the poll question. They'll claim their independence. Yes, just like the independent fact-checkers. Inskeep wrote, While it's widely believed that most mainstream journalists are Democrats, I've had colleagues that I was pretty sure are conservative, and then he said, I don't ask. So how does that rebut Berliner? Why wouldn't you ask? Is it because they won't be honest and say they're conservative for fear of they won't last in the newsroom they're working in? You know, Dana Milbank of the Washington Post tried this. Yeah, went to lunch with our boss, Brent Bozell, and we were told he made this big deal about how he's voted for both Republicans and Democrats. Well, maybe that's true. You know, maybe he voted for a Republican in a local race for mayor or something. Who knows? I wasn't in this lunch. But, you know, don't tell me you vote for Republicans when I can read what you're putting on the page at the Washington Post and your big-time Philip Bump liberal. Dana Milbank was bumpy before Bump. Now, when Inskeep challenged Berliner personally on his claim that the editing process was frictionless at NPR, he said Berliner acknowledged they have newsroom debates, but we all understand the kind of debates they're having in there. It's a debate between leftists. It's a debate between Democrats. So they may be contentious, but it's in a pretty narrow frame of reference. Berliner was making the point that the real test is what they broadcast or what they post on the internet, and that's absolutely right. I'm glad Inskeep and Berliner could agree on this. But Berliner was making a broader argument about what NPR was putting on. You know, regular stories on supposed racism, transphobia, signs of the climate apocalypse, Israel doing something bad, and the dire threat of Republican policies. Anybody who listens to NPR can tell you that's the kind of coverage there is. And you can know especially that there's not going to be an opposing point of view on climate. There's not going to be opposing point of view on transphobia. There's one side. One side is right. One side is just. One side apparently has all the facts, and you're not allowed to quibble with them at all. For example, here's what we'd always want to say to them on climate. Oh, so you're absolutely certain that climate catastrophe is around the corner in about the next 30 years. Now go back and look and see what people wrote in 1989 or 1990 about how we all had 10 years to live. How did that turn out? Dot, dot, dot. You know, I mean, they don't want to have to deal with the fact that these predictions of doom from before have not turned out. Just the same way that Paul Ehrlich wrote a book called The Population Bomb in 1968 saying we were all going to have massive diebacks from famine by 1975. That didn't happen either. But when you're a leftist, it doesn't matter if your doomsaying predictions turn out to be true. This is the arrogance, is that these people can't even say. As Republicans were trying to put it to Energy Secretary Granholm. So, if we do all these things you say and spend trillions of dollars and all get rid of our cars, how much does that affect the temperature? She didn't have an answer for that. Oh, it'll change the average temperature by 0.8 degrees Fahrenheit. I mean, you're just not allowed to disagree on these things in any way, shape, or form. That's the arrogance. That's the utter lack of humility. Now, you have to laugh when it comes to Hunter Biden. And Inskeep's actual defense is, well, everybody else did it too. He admits NPR did not report on Hunter's laptop, but he claimed Berliner leaves out the context. Other organizations also held off on the story because of doubts about the laptop's authenticity. It wasn't confirmed until much later. Yes, that's true. You know why? Because you all said, well, Hunter's laptop, Rudy Giuliani's got it, therefore it must be crap. That was their deduction. If Trump and his minions have the laptop, it must be false. That's why they didn't want to verify it. Now, you can argue that Giuliani should have given broader access to the laptop. I'm sure what Giuliani had, the opposite fear, is I give these guys the actual contents of the laptop, and they're going to find two things out of 200 and say, see, it's all full of lies, when they find two pages that don't seem authentic. When the New York Times and the Washington Post authenticated it, they tried very carefully to say they wouldn't authenticate all of it, but they authenticated a lot of it. And that should be a case of embarrassment. The news media should have said, gee, we really should have worked harder on this. And they could have had more time on this, but the FBI sat on the laptop. The FBI didn't want them to do this story before the election. That's also, there's no reckoning for that. And there's no reckoning for NPR. Now, the other thing Inskeep obviously leaves out here, and this is what really sticks in our craw. It's middle of October 2020, and when NPR gets pressured on this, their top news executive is a guy called Terrence Samuel. Now, I remember Terry Samuel when he was at U.S. News and World Report. He was a liberal jerk. So guess what? At NPR, he's also a liberal jerk. Guess where he is now? He's running USA Today because liberal jerks get promoted in the media. At the time, Terry Samuel, we don't want to waste our time on stories that are not really stories. And we don't want to waste the listeners' and readers' time on stories that are just pure distractions. There's a reason why so many conservatives on Twitter keep tweeting out the image of this quote. It's got all the hallmarks of, we're not touching it, we're not touching it, we're not touching it, blah, 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 fingers in my ears, hands over my eyes, whatever. They didn't even want to look at it. It's one thing to say we looked at it and we think it's bogus. They didn't want to look at it. They didn't want to waste their time on pure distractions, so we're not going to touch it. We're not going to look into it. These are some of these same media outlets, like the Washington Post. Well, we have a tape of Trump saying you can grab their pussy. They confirmed that in about 2 hours. And, you know, nobody challenged the audio tape's authenticity, like James Carville going, yeah, the Jennifer Flowers tapes are edited. You can't trust any of that. But, the fact of the matter is they could have tried harder. And why on earth did all of these people not confirm it for the entire first year of Biden's presidency? How long does it take? Does it really take a year and a half? I mean, that's preposterous. Now, Samuel went on All Things Considered a couple of times, we pointed out, where they were talking about censorship and disinformation. And both times, Mary Louise Kelly, the anchor, doesn't ask Terrence Samuel about the Hunter Biden laptop because, well, it's a pure distraction. Still a pure distraction to this day, apparently. She asks him about, you know, what views should be platformed. And he says, it's not just a matter of representing just opposite voices. It's about excluding the voices that are just pure disinformation. We all know what he means there. And that is, we're going to exclude the MAGA voices. And here's part of the problem with that. You can say, for example, I voted for Trump. I don't believe everything that comes out of his mouth. I might not agree with some of the claims he makes. But it's sort of like saying, well, I believe everything Jussie Smollett said, which is what the media did. They have no humility about how quickly they went down that thing. They didn't say Jussie Smollett was a pure distraction. They ran with it. And then in 2023, Samuel's on again with Mary Louise Kelly. She doesn't bring up the laptop. But they were talking about how when Trump was indicted, he would not be allowed to speak on NPR Live because he's such a liar. See, they had that Rachel Maddow energy. He's not allowed to speak live on our precious sacred airwaves, which the Republicans pay for. It's like, why don't you at least run 30 seconds of Trump? Because we're paying for this junk. Now, everybody who watches Donald Trump knows he's going to wildly exaggerate something about his own background or about how much people love him, you know, or he's going to say something an educated person immediately knows is wrong. Like recently when he was like, everybody wanted Roe versus Wade overturned. No, they didn't. But the problem with Trump is it causes liberal media arrogance to take off. You can never balance anything against Trump because it normalizes Trump. You can't correct Biden because it normalizes Trump. You can't have a two-sided debate because somehow that's hostile to democracy. And then we say a two-sided debate is anti-democracy? Your one-sided Jeremiah without any rebuttal represents democracy? We think you need to look at your dictionary. But the most ridiculous line in Inskeep's critique is claiming Berliner advocates viewpoint diversity, but he didn't embrace it in his article, which spurred all his errors and omissions, I guess. We all know Steve Inskeep is not a guy who's for viewpoint diversity. Did you ever see him interview Barack Obama? Did he have any viewpoint diversity in there? Well, you know, Mr. President, Republicans say you're a terrible person. I mean, he's not going to go there. Steve Inskeep had an interview with David Axelrod where he literally compared Obama to Lincoln. Could have used some viewpoint diversity in that interview. So why on earth is he lecturing Uri Berliner about viewpoint diversity? He's never shown any when he's interviewing these Democrats. Anyway, if NPR is committed to viewpoint diversity, then it should commit itself to a debate about what NPR is doing. We would like to say, let's have Inskeep debate Berliner on air at National Public Radio for an hour or 2 hours. They probably won't go for that. We'll underline this again. NPR hasn't said a word on its sacred airwaves about Berliner's complaint. David Funkenflick is doing stories on this, but only to give you the NPR company line. He interviewed Berliner, and there were some interesting things in there. And Funkenflick, Berliner's edited a bunch of his stories, so they're not exactly strangers to each other. And he let Berliner say some of his stuff in one of these online pieces, but it's online. We don't air our dirty laundry on air. And then these are the same people who turn around and say, you know, Fox News is terrible. Fox News doesn't allow another point of view. And that would be wrong. Fox News allows way more points of view and more viewpoint diversity than NPR does. Please ask Jessica Tarlov when she's not on maternity leave. Juan Williams used to be on The Five all the time. Now, you can try to say, oh, they're Fox Democrats. Like we say there are CNN Republicans. But the point being, NPR doesn't have any NPR Republicans, really, you know. And now, Adam Kinzinger, you know, I mean, it's just kind of silly. So let's turn back to Catherine Marr, the new CEO. Ed Morrissey at Hot Air is talking about how Marr was all about censoring the COVID skeptics in her time at Wikipedia. But first, he related the Washington Examiner column by Con Carroll, who calls Marr the queen of the Karens. He points out she's a vegetarian. She hates cars and white men flying on planes. She supports race-based reparations, rioting, and the Black Lives Matter movement. She believes America is addicted to white supremacy. These are all links to her tweets. She doesn't want to become a mother because the planet is literally burning. She uses phrases such as cis white mobility privileges unironically. She admits to growing up feeling superior because I was from New England and my part of the country didn't have slaves. Carol said, I wonder what fuels her sense of superiority now. Not only did Marr falsely label Senator Tom Cotton's New York Times op-ed on the 2020 riots as misinformation, she considered it her job at Wikimedia to censor speech she deemed harmful. Such speech includes former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, of all people, using the terms boy and girl, which Marr believes is, quote-unquote, erasing language for non-binary people. See, can you see why Berliner would say, I want off this train? If this person's going to be in charge. Now, they're all running around saying, the CEO of NPR doesn't have anything to say about the on-air editorial, blah, 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 blah. You know, they're all about raising money and making all these executive decisions, and they kind of leave the editorial decisions to lower people. She's still the leader, and that's basically what he's saying. She's going to set the tone the way a CEO does, and she's setting the tone, don't erase the non-binary people. Don't have children because the planet's on fire. What are you going to get from that? You're going to say, well, this is the quote-unquote news she wants us to manufacture. Now, they have a video clip of Maher discussing how COVID was an unknown disease, but they were going to act all-knowing in censoring people who were skeptical about it in an election year. Let's take a listen to what she said.
We took a very active approach to disinformation and misinformation coming into not just the last election, but also looking at how we supported our editing community in an unprecedented moment where we were not only dealing with a global pandemic, we were dealing with a novel virus, which by definition means we knew nothing about it in real time, and we're trying to figure it out as the pandemic went along. And so we really set up in response to both the pandemic, but also in response to the upcoming US election, and as a model for future elections outside of the US, including a number that are happening this year, we just obviously went through yet another Israeli election. The model was around how do we create sort of a clearinghouse of information that brings the institution of the Wikimedia Foundation with the editing community in order to be able to identify threats early on through conversations with government, of course, as well as other platform operators to understand sort of what the landscape looks like.
Don't you get a kick of how the censors are called the editing community? Here again, what's missing in all this process is humility. If you don't know anything about this coronavirus, maybe you could be less arrogant in deciding who's a liar, who's uncorking wild-eyed conspiracy theories, who has the people's interest at heart, because their assumption on all of this is not what they did. They claim to be complex thinkers on the left, but what they did was super simplistic. If Trump argued for it, it must be a barrel of lies. If he mocks the Chinese for being responsible for this virus, he is clearly a racist, and the Chinese must be as pure as the freshest snow. You say that there was a lab leak in China. Well, you're a conspiracy theorist. I mean, they literally define that as misinformation. And now, surprise, after Biden became president, well, it's not misinformation anymore. And this is part of what the problem was. Everything seemed designed to say, if this helps Trump get off the mat, when we think COVID's the silver bullet, we are not going to let Trump be free of COVID or being blamed for COVID. They thought it was perfectly fair to accuse him of killing hundreds of thousands of people. That was allowed. These same journalists would never suggest that Joe Biden was responsible for a single COVID death, but they were comparing Trump's body count to Vietnam. That's reporters who did that. And they sort of tried to ask Trump and his press secretaries, how many COVID deaths are acceptable to you? The proper answer to that was to step out from behind the podium and slap him in the face. Now, I don't really endorse violence because I'm a lover, not a fighter. But it's just at some point you have to take exception to how rude that question is. I don't know, Ryan, Lizza, how many people did you kill in the last 3 months? You know, it's rude. But this is the whole point, and this is why Republicans will answer a poll question about whether 2020 was a rigged election. They're including all of this, all the COVID censorship, all the mail-in balloting and the loosey-goosey with the democratic process because of the pandemic. That is not to say that Trump won in a landslide. It's merely to say The 2020 election was a highly unusual election, and it had a very high turnout, and that's probably because people were very upset about COVID. You know, the people who voted for Biden were very upset about the massive death toll, okay? Now, the large death toll doesn't mean the percentage of people who were infected with COVID who died was quite low, but the number of dead was not low. The Trump voters, and that includes people who, you know, might have voted against Trump in 2016. They were upset about the lockdowns. They were upset about vaccine mandates, mask mandates. People had had their small businesses in desperate condition because of COVID, probably went out and voted for Trump. So you put those two things together, you get massive turnout. What the Trump people were trying to do was say massive turnout means there was a lot of fake voting going on. Well, that's a guess. We believe Joe Biden was elected, but that doesn't mean you can say that what the liberals did here was fair. Remember, they wrote this big cover story in Time magazine about how they all came together and saved democracy by electing Biden. This, again, is the complete lack of humility that these people are going to pose as, we are the forces of democracy. You, at Newsbusters, are dictators. You love autocracy. You want a tyranny. I mean, that's so offensive. Once again, don't say that to my face. I might hit you with a water balloon. Yikes. At bottom, we shall repeat. PBS and NPR are taxpayer-funded liberal sandboxes. What we'd really like to do is take away the taxpayer funding and let them be a liberal sandbox paid for by liberals. Would that really be such a terrible thing? It would be fair and just and right, and we're going to keep advocating for it here at Newsbusters. You can keep up with us on public broadcasting. We have a public broadcasting tag, a PBS tag, an NPR tag, anything you want to follow. It's all there. You can come once, twice, 24 times a day. Thanks for listening.